return from the depths of the Badland. With a gun and a knife and a waistband. With the war with the devil and Shaytan. He wore a bad toupee and a spray tan. So high now, hoping that I land. On a tie stick, moving through Thailand. On the radio, heard a plane hijack. Government being back like the crook crack.
Welcome to the fifth episode of the Lookout Landing podcast. I am managing editor of Lookout Landing, Kate Prusser. And I am joined, as always, by audio engineer and graphics wizard extraordinaire, Jose Rivera. Jose, how are you?
I am good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Are you watching out your window to see the trucks descending upon Arizona for spring training?
Yeah, I am waiting for them to get here. I can't wait.
And will you be attending any spring training this year, do you think?
Yeah, I hope to. Past couple years I haven't been able to get out to Peoria. It's like 45 minutes, probably like an hour, hour and a half with traffic. But yeah, I definitely plan on getting out there this year, so if anybody is there and wants to say what's up, let's do it.
Yes, since I believe a good portion of Lookout Landing will be descending upon Peoria in these few weeks coming. Joining us tonight as well is Zach Sanders, former writer for Fangraphs, chief biz boss at LL, and a frustrated cat lover who does not have a cat. So if you have a cat hanging out, send it to Zach. Zach, how are you?
I don't want people's reject cats.
I mean, just extra cats. There are no reject cats.
They are rejecting them in favor of the other cats. I want the ones they want to keep. I would like that one.
Would you go around and, like, Grinch-style catnap all the cats from all the little Whos?
That sounds like a good way to get scratched. Oh, man, that sounds awful.
It's good to have you with us, Zach. And we are also joined tonight. Why don't you do the introduction since he is your intern, technically, and therefore your problem?
Don't I know it? So we're also joined tonight by, pardon a potential mispronunciation, but Luke Munger, who is our editorial intern and has been on the site already in the past couple weeks. He's going to be the strong silent type today.
I mean, you can say hi, Luke. It's okay.
Hi, I'm Luke. I'm glad to be here. Thank you, guys.
Tell the nice people a little bit about yourself, Luke.
A little bit about myself? Oh, I mean, what is there to know? I'm a student at UW. I'm a sophomore right now. I'm studying biz also, which is probably the only reason that Zach picked me.
It is.
Yeah. So that's pretty fun. Maybe we can talk about marketing together one day. I don't know. But yeah, I'm a business student at UW. Just kind of living the dream. Yeah. I don't really know. I'm not very good about talking about myself. I'm actually not that good about talking about anything.
You're a country music fan?
Yes, I am. I am. I went to Watershed last year, and the Watershed lineup just came out a couple days ago, and now I'm considering spending another $300, but I don't want to. But Lee Bryce is going to be there, so I'm like, I kind of have to, but I'm not going to, I don't think.
You should.
I should?
Yeah.
Should I start a GoFundMe? Is that...
No, just use some of that sweet, sweet intern money.
Yeah, exactly.
You're also a force out on the basketball court.
Yeah, yeah. I played in an IMA basketball game yesterday. We're 1-4 on the year, mm-hmm. which is unfortunate. I had a season-high 5 points, which is pretty sweet. I hit a three.
Nice. And then,
yeah, I high-fived a couple people after. It was pretty exciting.
It's a big day for Luke.
Yeah.
All right, well, we are happy to have you.
Oh, no, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
So for those of you who don't know, tonight we are talking about this is our AL West preview episode, and Luke and Zach have put a ton of work into doing some AL West preview report card type things. And we're going to play a fun game where Luke has to run down every team's off season in 30 seconds or less. So we'll do that. But before that, let's kick off the show with our opening segment. Three things you should know from the baseball world this week. Okay. First thing, not the day before we published last week's episode, where we were rejoicing about Jesus Sucre returning to the fold, Jerry traded him away yesterday to Tampa Bay, aka the Mariners South. What did we come up with? 8 players on their 40-man who are ex-Mariners? Is that right?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
Sucre, Miller, Lomo, Farquhar, Kevin Gadea, the Rule 5 pick.
Oh, yeah.
Erasmo. And there are 2 more that I can't think of. So...
Nick Franklin.
There's one. And...
Malix. Well, are we counting Malix?
Oh. I mean, I guess we could.
We probably should. Yeah. Mariner legend Malix Smith.
Mariner legend Malix Smith. Right. So, yeah. Peace be with you, Jesus Sucre. We are sad at the sight because he was, although not a good baseball batter, he's a pretty good defensive catcher and just an overall nice guy the pitching staff really seemed to enjoy. So that's a sad thing. Who wants to cover the second thing? Any Ackley lovers among us?
Oh, that ain't me.
I know. I'm like, eh.
No. We should have had Ethan on to do this. Send off to Dustin Ackley. I was not around for a lot of the Dustin Ackley time, so I never participated in like the build up and the hype. I never experienced the Dustin Ackley hype. But for some people who did and who still feel the residual effects, the Angels signed Dustin Ackley to a minor league deal this year, and some people have some complicated feelings about it. Realistically, I wish him all the best because that's a sad story and he was kind of a victim of the, I think, poor player development and just never really quite seemed to find his footing. So best of luck to you, Dustin.
He's not making that team.
No, you don't think so? I mean, we'll talk about this later. We actually got a question about Ackley, so we can delve into him a little more later. And then the third thing we need to talk about is these Rob Manfred just did a bunch of whippets, I guess, and threw out a bunch of rule change proposals, which range from, I think, like the sensible, like doing away with having to throw 4 balls for the intentional walk, to the, okay, maybe, which would be the raising of the strike zone, to something I can only describe as banana pants, which is starting extra innings games with a runner already on second base, which just sounds like some made-up stuff, which they're going to start rolling out in rookie ball. What are your guys' feelings on the proposed rule changes?
Most of them are fine. I think they're going to try out the extra innings ones and realize it's probably not good. But it doesn't mean it's not worth a try. It is rookie ball. It's not... I mean, these games technically count, but not in any meaningful way.
Yeah, and as I saw, I believe Kyle Brody, I don't know how to say his name, the driveline guy. Jose, do your driveline voice.
Driveline!
The driveline bros. He tweeted something to the effect that, like, if you are not in favor of that, you've probably never seen a rookie ball game because it's can be pretty sloppy. So I don't have a problem with it at the lower levels. But, oh boy, I think if you try to bring that change to MLB, people will finally really get passionate about baseball. I think there will be a lot of yelling about it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it in rookie ball in the lower levels, but I just can't see that flying in MLB. That's just, I'm against it. Nah. No, thank you.
Nah. Or as Noah Syndergaard tweeted, nope.
Nope.
Just all caps, nope. Oh, I love Noah Syndergaard. All right. So that kind of wraps up what you need to know this week in baseball. Let's move on to our divisional previews. So this is where Luke is going to take the stage. All right, Jose, do you have the buzzer ready to go?
I've got it ready to go.
All right, Luke, it's your turn to shine. 30 seconds. recap the Astros offseason for us.
Right. Well, the Astros, which is kind of a little bit of fun stuff here, brought in Nori Aoki, which was, I mean, that was a fun guy. I liked him. They also brought in Josh Reddick and Carlos Beltran. So, I mean, that's adding some bats to the outfield, not necessarily some defensive-oriented people. That's not too bad. They also brought in Charlie Morton to kind of bolster up the pitching staff a bit, and Brian McCann came in to catch in place of Jason Castro, who is no longer with the team. They're a pretty young team, and they're kind of tied up. Or they have a lot of young people kind of tied up.
Oh, not
a
lot of money,
so I was
kind of
expecting them to go out and do a little more than they did. I think that when
they're playing him off, he won't get off the stage.
I know. Wrap it up, B.
It's like is it the some like Emmys or Grammys or whatever when they start playing the music?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, sorry, Luke.
That right, I'll go hide in the corner again.
That was an epic fail, Luke. I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed for you. I'm ashamed for your family.
I'm ashamed we hired him.
This is really making us rethink. All right, so the Astros did a few things as Luke ran over for you in the offseason. We still have three big questions to address about them. Question number one, are the Astros as good as projection systems say they are?
I think they pretty much are. Yeah. Right now, projections have them about 90 wins. They won 84 last year, and that was with a pretty hefty late-season collapse of sorts. So they definitely have that kind of huge potential to be a runaway division winner, like clearly lock down that spot. It just depends on how that balance turns out. Like they signed some older guys, which would be a nice help for that kind of young team, but it also means you're bringing in guys who could be in the back half of their career. And then they still have those unproven guys. So Bregman's there. We don't know how good he is. I mean, he's going to be great. He was already pretty good last year, but he's untested. Ulieski's there too. He's untested. And so we're kind of adding these different variables together and seeing how it goes. And they're for the most part doing things the right way, and that's how they've gotten here. And this is the time for them to do it, but you never know how well it's actually going to turn out.
I would say that there are, for all the talk about how scary and formidable the lineup is, I agree that there are a few question marks. So, like, obviously, Altuve is going to be a pain, Correa is going to be a pain, Springer is going to be a pain. I'm not particularly nervous about Nori Aoki, but I have big question marks next to Bregman, who is untested, as you said, next to Gurriel, next to Reddick, who is being projected a little above. I think they stuck 50 points or so onto his slugging percentage. I don't know why he's magically going to slug 50 points higher than he did last year in whatever Minute Maid. So that's a question mark. McCann is an upgrade over Castro, but, you know, moderate. So I think there are question marks here.
Yeah, if you asked me this question 2 weeks ago, I probably would have said that they are going to run away with the division. Today, I think my tune has changed a little bit. Kind of like what Zach said about the older guys that may be on the back end of their career. I love Carlos Beltran, but I mean, he's what, 39 years old. Brian McCann is 36, something like that. I'm just not sure how much those guys will be able to contribute. I still think they're going to get about, I think the projection is about right. I still think they're going to get about 90 wins. So, but, yeah, there's definitely some question marks there.
McCann's only 32. You're trying to age him up there.
Well, he looks like he's on the wrong side of 35.
Ouch. No, I think that's fair. Well, so the rotation is scary-ish, still has some question marks. Let's talk about, so I think would be the second big question, how much of a problem for, let's talk about the rotation in general and how much of a problem rotation depth might be.
Yeah, I mean, for most teams, the depth they have isn't bad. They have seven guys when you consider they have Musgrove and Devenski sort of waiting in the wings. And they have Brad Peacock there who can sort of step in at least throw some innings. And generally, that's fine. You got 7-8 guys, you're in good shape. But the problem is, with them, you almost know you're going to need 7 guys. Yeah. Charlie Morton is not going to pitch a full season. It's just not happening. And Lance McCullers has had some injury problems, and they're probably going to want to at least keep some of his innings down if they can. So they're going to need those 7 guys, and that 8th guy becomes more important then, because then he's the true backup. And so if anyone else gets hurt, then you're really in trouble, and then you're looking like maybe you're stretching out Michael Feliz again. And that's not really gone well in the past. He's sort of settled into a bullpen role. But so they have some arms, but the problem is if there's that kind of cascade effect, there is just no one else there to step in.
And that is also depending not just on none of these guys getting injured, but Keuchel, McCullers, and McHugh all had kind of uneven, would that be fair to say, uneven seasons last year?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you're depending on them not only to be healthy, but also for all three of those guys to bounce back and be effective for a whole year. Which is a lot. That's a lot to ask.
And one thing I was going to ask, Zach might know this a little bit better. Francis Martes, mm-hmm. Do you think he ended up contributing this year for them?
I think he may be forced to. I don't think that's what they want at all.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too.
He's probably going to start the year in AAA. I know they brought him to big league camp, so that's a good sign. But he's sort of done all he used to do at AA. But I mean, for a guy with his sort of stuff and his pedigree, the results have been good, but they're still not great. Like you'd want to see a guy just flat out dominate a level. And for the most part, he just hasn't done that yet. But that's just it. He's only 20.
Yeah.
And so he's very much a prospect. And so maybe he does take a nice step forward this year after stepping up to AAA and getting a chance at training camp. And maybe he is ready. But that's asking a lot from him.
For sure.
Something else that we should bring up when we're talking about the rotation is the strength of the Astros bullpen, which was one of the best in the majors last year. I think they were worth almost 8 FWAR in 16. And of that group, the only person who has departed is Pat Neshek. So they should still have a pretty formidable bullpen. So all those starters really have to do is carry things into the 5th or 6th inning, right, and then let the bullpen take over.
Exactly. They have kind of that extra depth, and maybe that's why they didn't go out and make that big move for a starting pitcher like we'd sort of expect a team to at their level, because they know they just need to get to that point and hand it to the pen and call it a day.
Well, that kind of ties into one of our listener questions. Ezekiel Pearson at Pearson Bro asked, did the Astros make a mistake in not acquiring Jose Quintana?
So with what I just said being entirely true, I also think the answer to that question is yes.
Yeah.
This is the time for them to make that push. And bringing in Charlie Morton as your sort of Doug Fister replacement is fine. But it doesn't kind of make you a better team than you were before. It just limits the downside. And so as good as those guys are, right? Lance McCullers is a solid starter, got good potential. McHugh, decent starter. Keuchel was great 2 years ago. But even with how great he was, he's not one of those guys that was, in a way, overwhelming to hitters. He was certainly almost dominating them, but it's never a guy you were afraid to face. And that was sort of always the issue, right? That this eventually could happen, that he could get a little worse. And all of a sudden, he's still a very good starter, but he's not great anymore. And so, while Quintana is kind of in that same mold, it's also that difference of replacing a guy like right now in a playoff series, you're starting Mike Fiers, number 4. And so, making that replacement is sort of the big thing. And while they're kind of set up nicely now for the regular season and putting their starting 5 together, that went a bit of big move to put them over the top should they get to the postseason.
Yeah, I think if they pulled off a trade for Quintana, I think that would be a wrap. Like, that's, the vision is there, there's no question.
Well, let's all thank the flying spaghetti monster in the sky that they did not. Also, though, that would have pretty well devastated their farm system, right? And because I know that there was rumblings of a Quintana trade, but I think the price was just too high.
Yeah, the White Sox know what they have in him and that he's on a cheap contract. And so they're not just going to give him away. I was a little surprised they didn't after trading Sale, but it's just at that point they don't want to completely just blow it up if they don't have to, Chicago. And so that was why they're asking so much. And maybe Houston's right not to kind of blow it all up. Mm-hmm. And because they have made those deals in the past, right? The Carlos Gomez trade sort of was the first step in that. The Ken Giles trade took a lot out of that system. And so they still have some depth there, but a lot of that depth is getting older and getting ready to graduate in some cases. Or the other guys they have are a little younger. And sort of so there's not the in-between guy that's kind of the perfect guy for them to move that has the right mix of value. And so it was a tough decision for them, and maybe history will play out in their favor, but I don't think it was the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, our final big question about the Astros. On a team that consistently jabs thorns into the Mariners' sides, which Astro will be the thorniest? Whose name are we going to be cursing this year?
It's a kind of a wimpy pick because it's too obvious, but it's Altuve.
Yeah, it's got to be Altuve, right? I mean, it's always Altuve.
So always what Altuve. About the non-Altuve division?
Yes, non-Altuve division.
I'm going to go with Marwin Gonzalez.
Oh my God, he's always so annoying.
I mean, I guess Bregman. I was thinking about him too. He could be one of those players.
I think it's going to be Nori Aoki.
No.
Oh my God.
Are you serious?
Because every good thing he does for them is just going to kill us.
Yeah, it's a good point. On a personal level, I feel like Gurriel might be my... Because I love me a Cuban. And one of my frustrations with the Mariners is how they've been inactive on the international trade market. Fairly inactive. And so I just feel like that would really like just specifically be designed to grind my gears if he was awesome. Do you want to pipe in here, Luke, or just in your corner of shame?
Zach kind of stole it. I was going to say it would be hilarious if it was Nori Aoki. I don't have a whole lot to add, though. Yeah, I'd say it would be funny if it was Aoki, like Zach said, just because it would be such a big bummer, or it would just be like that much more everything that he did. It would just feel that much. It would just be an added emphasis to it, just because he was.
Well, that's also like the typical thing to happen to Mariners. The player they had wasn't that good. Goes to a different team, kills us.
Like Adrian Beltre, right with Texas. Yeah. I mean, he was fine here, but then he goes to Texas and is superb. And Boston, he was with Boston before too. Never mind.
Yeah, I was just looking at that one year with Boston.
They always get better when they leave. Well, speaking of Beltre. That's a nice transition to the next AL West team we're going to talk about, the Texas Rangers. So we'll take a little break, and then we'll come back and talk about the Rangers. Talking about the Texas Rangers, and Luke is back to do his 30-second recap, which will hopefully go better than the Astros one, which was honestly just, I was embarrassed for you. So, all right.
Well, I'm glad you're embarrassed because I wasn't at all.
That's a good way to live your life, Luke.
Exactly.
All right, set the timer. Ready, set, go.
All right, Ian Desmond is gone. So now Carlos Gomez, who was there for the last part of last year, is going to kind of take his spot as kind of the older guy who's going to tear it up. I think he had a 905 OPS in the second half of the year for Texas, so that was pretty sweet. They also just brought Napoli in to play first base, which figured out an issue there. I was kind of like, why haven't they addressed that yet? They also brought in Andrew Kashner and Tyson Ross to kind of bolster their pitching staff a little bit. They allowed the 10th most runs in baseball last year, so they went and kind of addressed that action right there too. So that's kind of their little post-season. That was like 27.
That was not bad. That was not bad.
Especially because I spent half of it talking about Carlos Gomez, which wasn't even an off-season move.
No, it wasn't. What a weird choice for you to make. All right. So, three big questions about the Rangers, then. You mentioned Tyson Ross. How many innings does Tyson Ross pitch for the Rangers? How much better does he make their staff?
As a member of the Rangers, like in the minors and in the majors, he'll probably pitch 50 to 60 innings just because he's got to do a lot of rehab work. But I don't see him getting more than like four starts in the majors this year.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I don't think he's going to pitch a whole lot this year, too.
It's too much of an injury to come back from.
When's he slated to like make his return?
No one knows.
You know when the ETA is?
Well, see, yeah, that's the thing with the thoracic outlet syndrome.
Thoracic outlet.
Thoracic, thank you. It sounds like a dinosaur. That's how I have to remember it. The thoracic period. Nobody knows what the timetable is going to be. And Ross went to the Rangers specifically because their medical staff has experience with dealing with this. So hopefully... But it because it's such a rare injury and there have been only a few players who have been able to bounce back from it who haven't just retired, we really don't have any kind of an idea. Like, I've seen everything from, oh, yeah, he'll be ready to start pitching in April to, like, no, he would maybe only be a postseason option for them to, like, no, he could be back after the All-Star break. Like, everyone's just kind of talking out of their butts at this point, though, as far as I can tell. So, hard to predict Tyson Ross and how many innings he pitches for the Rangers. But definitely if they're making a late season push, that could be troubling. And if Ross has rebounded, but still a huge question mark. So the next question we have, how concerned are you with the Rangers' defense? They had, they lost Moreland from first base, who last season, their infield made 15 errors with Moreland, which is an average of one for every 72 innings. So not great, not bad. But with other first basemen, they made one error every 45 innings about, and a lot of that coming from Beltre, obviously, is pretty solid, but Andrews and Odor maybe have some tendencies to throw the ball wildly. So are we worried at all about them? Defensively, they have not made any upgrades. Napoli is not a defensive upgrade at first base over Moreland. Are we worried about the defense?
Personally, if I were them, I wouldn't be. I think part of that is having Jonathan Lucroy now behind the plate is a big overall upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Having him for a full season. But as much as you can cite the errors and all that, last year the advanced metrics for defense had them as average to slightly above average. They were a pretty solid defensive team. And while they didn't make any upgrades there, that first base move could help or hurt, most likely hurt. But and it all depends on what you thought about Ian Desmond in center, too. That was a one-year thing, and now they have a guy that's more experienced in it with Carlos Gomez, and that certainly helps out as well, having him as the veteran there to help, especially when it comes to guiding a guy like Nomar Mazzara, of how to play off that guy in the center. And maybe that makes an impact that we don't see yet. And so that it's unclear, but I'm frankly not worried about their defense. I think their defense is fine.
Well, let's move on to the third big question surrounding the Rangers. Will they win as many one-run games as they did last year?
Heck no.
No. No. I mean, that was like some strange voodoo magic, right?
What was their run differential again? Wasn't it like 9 for the entire season?
It was 8.
8.
Oh my God.
And in comparison, the Mariners were plus 61.
That's insane.
While winning 9 less games. So, yeah, the Rangers had some luck.
Baseball, you difficult mistress. So, I mean, and I very much enjoy Levi Weaver, who is a W fan, columnist who was nice enough to come to LL and write our view from the Rangers fan point of view, he kind of argued that, well, it was luck, but they also had some bad luck with the bullpen, and so it really all evens out. I'm not sure. I don't buy that logic. I did not buy that logic. Sorry, Levi. I think they were incredibly lucky, and I don't think it evened out and was a measure of their true talent. Which we kind of saw when they went and got curb stomped by the Blue Jays, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just could not hang with them at all.
Yeah, I don't. This isn't a team with a bullpen that makes you think, yeah, this team should be just dominating one run games.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not. Their bullpen is fine. That's the best way I can describe it.
It's a little less fine without Diekman, right?
Right.
As somebody who has family members who suffer colon problems, I sort of love that he's, you know, taking pictures on social media with his colostomy bag and, like, really kind of destigmatizing that. Hashtagging no colon, still rolling. So I'm definitely rooting for Diekman on a personal level, but it hurts them somewhat. And I think Keone Kila is exciting, but also kind of unpredictable. I have some questions about their bullpen, for sure. So our listener question we have, Luke Knapp asks, will James Jones, speaking of the bullpen, formidable lefty reliever, strike out a Mariner in 2017?
I'd bet not.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say no on that one.
No. I mean, didn't he have to have, like, surgery, too? Did he have, like,
I know he got injured, like, shortly after they moved him to, well, I guess back to pitcher, because I guess he was a pitcher in high school or something like that. But I know once the Rangers made the move, he ended up injuring himself pretty quick. And I think that was it.
Apparently he had Tommy John surgery.
Oh, yeah, geez. That's what I thought.
He's not striking out of Mariner this year. I feel pretty confident. Happening.
All right. Well, that pretty much sums up the Rangers. So we will take another brief break. And when we come back, we will talk about the Angels.
Cue the music out the driveway. Slow summer on a Friday. Here we go again, wild in the wind. Mama knows she's gonna be late. Hit the party just to watch her dance. Good to go when she grabs your hand. Like a shot from a gun, it's a dead run. The first leg on the getaway plan. You burn rubber when you smoke them ties. Day's gone and night's on fire.
And we're back. Next up, we move to the California teams. And we're going to talk about the Angels. All right, Luke. Are you ready?
Never been more ready for anything in my life.
All right, ready, set, go.
All right, so the Angels made some additions in the outfield. They brought in Cameron Maybin and Ben Revere, so their outfield is now very athletic and very exciting. Danny Espinosa is going to play at second base instead of Johnny Giovitella. Espinosa hit a lot of dingers last year, but he also struck out a ton, which is interesting. They lost Jared Weaver and CJ Wilson because they're both old, and they brought in Jesse Chavez, who didn't start a game last year, but he made 47 starts for Oakland between 2014 and 2015 and was solid while doing so. So that kind of sums up their offseason. I think Zach gave him a B plus, so I'll give him that grade too.
Ooh, this time you actually got the letter grades in.
But, I know.
But forgot Valbuena.
Oh, Luis Valbuena, that's right.
Oh, that's going to take your score down.
I guess we don't talk about him.
I don't like talking about Luis Valbuena.
There we go. That's the spirit.
All right. So three big questions about the Angels. And I think the first thing, and the thing that is weighing heavily upon a lot of LL members' minds, why do projection systems like them so much?
It depends by like them so much. Like, what does that mean? The ones I look at have them in the low to mid 80s. And that seems entirely fair.
84? 84?
Yeah, 84 seems entirely reasonable for this team. As much as I think of it as Trout and no one else, that's just no longer the case.
Yeah.
Well, this is a question from one of our readers, Derry McDonald. Does Fangraph's 84 win projection pass the laugh test for you? Did they clone Mike Trout to gain those 10 wins?
No, I think it is all very reasonable, and there is reason to be somewhat worried about this team, especially after they got Valbuena. That was huge, because it takes a burden off Pujols if he's hurt. It allows CJ Krohn to be more of a supplemental guy, a platoon guy off the bench. You know, Espinoza, he's not going to hit like he did last year. It's just not going to happen. But he plays a solid second base, and mm-hmm. he gives him something that Giovitello really didn't. And like this upgrading left field was a black hole for them last year. They got nothing out of it. And so all of a sudden to have two real MLB players there is a huge upgrade. You know, just from upgrading from nothing. And you can question the rotation all you want, but it wasn't any better last year.
Well, the rotation was amazingly hurt last year. I mean, they were just completely snake bitten by injuries, right? Houston Street went down, and then his replacement Bedrosian went down, and they lost Shoemaker in that kind of freak accident. They lost who else am I forgetting?
Well, they had Skaggs and Heaney.
Was Garrett Richards? Richards? Yep. So, I mean, they got Texas's rotation luck with the injuries last year, I think. That cloud passed over. They forgot to put the blood on their doors. They went for them instead. So that kind of ties into one of our listener questions from Pacific Northwest Vandal. I am really worried about the Angels. Why is this unfounded? We are seeing that it's maybe founded.
It is entirely founded. As much as it is not fun to say, this Angels team is as good as the Mariners.
I mean, they've built very similarly to the Mariners, right? Like, no huge splashy off-season moves, although obviously not the volume of trades Jerry has made, but building a lot of defensive ability, building a strong defensive outfield that they didn't have before, and upgrading a few positions that were black holes for them. It's a very similar path to what the Mariners have done in their offseason.
Yeah, and for the most part, these are two teams that are going to have to take that path over the next 2 to 3 years. They both have players locked up to big deals that aren't going anywhere, especially some that are aging. They both kind of need to compete because they can't stomach that rebuild. But they also don't have the resources in the Angels' case. I mean, they have no one in their farm system. Or, in our case, aren't willing to spend what resources you do have to sort of make a push for now. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be doing this dance with them probably next year and maybe even the year after that. It's not going to be a one-time thing.
So is one Mike Trout worth one Nelson Cruz, Kyle Seager, and Robinson Cano put together?
The combo is a little better than that, but it's not far off, and that's their big advantage.
Trout was great last year. I mean, I feel like we say this every year. I feel like we cannot possibly appreciate how lucky we are to live in a time where we get to see Mike Trout play baseball. Like, we will be telling people about this. Telling our grandchildren, or you know, whatever children we can talk to on the street if we don't have our own issue. I'm not directing that at you, Zach, at all. But I mean, he's a generational player. Is he going to be better next year?
No, but he'll be just as good.
Seems right.
It's hard to explain or even come up with an idea of how he'd get better in a reasonable sense. The only thing that could even come close to that is a Barry Bonds steroid era season. That's it. Where you're literally getting on base 50% of the time because you're getting intentionally walked every other at bat. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only thing Trout can really do at this point to become better than he is now. And so you look at a traditional aging curve or whatever, he's not going to have it. He's at the kind of the peak you can be. And so it's all about just longevity now. how long can you keep doing this before that body breaks down?
Yeah, it's, and that's something I was just thinking about too, because he's still only 25.
Yeah.
I mean, when the season starts, he's going to still be 25.
That's fun.
So I think this is the kind of level that he's playing at. I think he's going to maintain it for years and years. I mean, barring any kind of major injury. But this trout train ain't stopping. It's going to keep going and going as long as it can.
Aren't we so lucky to get to play against him? All right, so my third big question about the Angels is Garrett Richards opted to go for stem cell treatment versus Tommy John, which would have knocked him out, obviously, for the full year. How risky is this? Is this going to come back and bite the Angels, do you think?
Well, I mean, in this political climate, stem cell is not something you want to do.
No politics.
Hashtag no politics.
No politics. We're going to have to cut that out, Zach, you jerk.
I'm not a doctor. I'll make that clear.
Really?
Wait, you're not?
I don't even play one on TV.
We've been paying you like one, so I don't understand.
I get paid like a medical student. And so, from what I've read and from what I understand, in a way, he is the guinea pig here. It's very much unclear if this is a true replacement for Tommy John. They're hoping it is, and the idea is that it takes essentially a 12-month recovery into something more like 12 weeks. And that's incredible. He was cleared to start throwing before last season even ended. They didn't ramp him up like that, simply because they didn't need to. They had nothing to play for at that point. And so the question then becomes, if you're Garrett Richards, or maybe the Angels have a say in this too, is this a risk worth taking and saying, instead of essentially being out, say, to the All-Star break this year, which is probably what would have happened if he had surgery last season, would you rather take the chance that you can come back and be ready for about the start of the year, probably, is what they're hoping. No one knows yet, but they're saying he'll be ready for the start of the year. And then take the risk that this is all going to fail, and within a couple months, you're going to need the surgery again. And if you're them, the Angels at least, Richards, maybe he has his own motives, of course, but the Angels want to capitalize on the here and now. Another year older for Pujols is not good. Another year older for a guy maybe like Cole Calhoun, not good. You know, you have to get more roster turnover. If you think now is the time, that you'd want to push that player to be ready now and try something. And so the question is it who made the decision here and what was the motive? We can't answer that. So it just becomes of what's the reward worth?
And that's exactly actually what I was going to bring up, in terms of, you know, this is a win now window for them. If this doesn't work out for them, I mean, that starting rotation takes a pretty big hit. Do you think they have the depth to make up for that if this does not work out for them?
They have practically no starting pitching depth.
Yeah.
No.
It would be brutal if this did not work out. So that's a curious question, you know, if how much of a say the organization had when he, or maybe the team doctors brought this up to them when this was an option. My initial thought would probably be like, yeah, I don't know about that right now. But it's an interesting scenario. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, then that's really going to hurt them, I think.
Yeah. And this is one of those rare things where it's a storyline that no one will be talking about. It's not all that interesting in the media. Even though we are the media, to be fair. Some of us are media celebrities. But
Zach is talking about himself, to be clear there.
I'm important. This is going to have an impact across all of baseball, whether this works or not. And you won't hear it talked about. No one's going to bring it up that this is something to keep an eye on. But it is. Because if this works, then all of a sudden we have a revolutionary possibility.
Yeah.
To deal with elbow injuries.
Well, we will be keeping an eye on it at LL for you, the listener. All right, one more question from Chris Tiboli at Avocado Roller. What's the plan for Ackley? Do they see him as a utility guy? Will he be allowed to smile around Mike Socha? Is anyone allowed to smile around Mike Socha? I mean, the man ripped down Trout's basketball hoop. Like, if you're going up against Mike Trout and you're like, no fun for you, Trout. Yeah, poor Ackley, going from not being allowed to have his beard to not being allowed to smile.
Was this asked by someone with the name Avocado?
Avocado Roller is his handle.
I would equate that to Dustin Ackley. Both are bad.
Oh. I find avocados to be delicious and Dustin Ackley to be a nice southern boy who had the really unfortunate walk-up song, Fortunate Son. Such irony. Looking back on that.
That's a country song, by the way.
Luke?
I don't think that's a country song.
It is.
I have a hard time agreeing with that.
I defer to Luke here.
But technically Luke has to defer to me, probably.
All right. We are going to take a break here, and I'm going to have an HR chat with Zach. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the fearsome Oakland Athletics. Found on the wire, we both caught fire. The air expands to stand beside you. The words don't make it true, but what I do to meet you, I heed the call, I answer them all. We have just one team left to cover in our AL West preview, and it is the Oakland Athletics. All right, Luke, are you ready?
Yeah, this time I won't forget people, hopefully.
Yeah, don't forget any major signings. All right, ready? Yeah. 3, 2, 1, go.
All right, so Oakland made their outfield better by bringing in Matt Joyce and Rajai Davis. They kind of had a hole in the outfield because they got rid of Valencia, who ended up kind of playing every day in the outfield towards the end of the year for them. And they got Paul Blackburn for that. And more to their pitching staff, they brought in Santiago Casilla, who's a pretty old reliever, but he's solid. In their infield, they brought in Trevor Plouffe and Adam Rosales. Plouffe will play third base. He hit 13 dingers. Or no, Rosales hit 13 dingers last year. And he'll be a nice kind of utility guy while Plouffe will play third, and that'll allow Healy to play DH, and then Yonder Alonso will play at first.
That was, like, way over 30 seconds.
No, it wasn't. That was
it, like, was so far over 30 seconds.
I gave him about 5 more seconds.
3 big questions about the A's. There's nothing fun about the A's, really, except Ryan Healy, who is pretty fun. But is he the real deal?
He's somewhat of the real deal. The A's fans mostly jokingly are talking about MVP, but he's not that kind of guy. He's not going to be a star. I don't think he's even going to be an all-star. He can hit for power. That's evident. He can hit for some batting average, too. Not bad at that. But he's just not that complete offensive threat. He doesn't have that model of being able to simply draw a walk when he needs to. He's not going to do that. He's going to swing freely. He, quite frankly, is not a third baseman. He will, and that was why kind of that move for Trevor Plouffe made so much sense for them this offseason. It allows them to move Plea over to first or put him at DH every day. Let him focus on hitting mostly. He'd be a lot more valuable if he could hold down at third at all. But he just can't. And so that kind of takes away whatever value he has. He's got time to develop, but at this point, he looks like he's kind of a slightly better version of Mark Trumbo.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting comp.
I mean, He slugged a 524 last year, so that's nothing to sneeze at. And he did hit for some average, but... That that walk rate is really concerning. It was 4.2% last year, and you could say, okay, small sample size. But he never really hit. I mean, that was his rate at A-ball, 4.7, 5.5. He didn't hit double digits until Double-A in 164 plate appearances. So I think you're right. He's a free swinger, and his strikeouts have steadily climbed as he's gone along. But, you know, that power is very real. 13 home runs last year. And this kind of ties into a question that we got from Elias Haim, who asked us, how many home runs will Ryan Healy hit against the M's this year? Predictions? I think 15 seems safe. Well, no, I mean...
Against the Mariners?
Not 15. Well, I don't know. In like a whole year, he hit 13. It felt like all 13 of those came against us.
I'm thinking like 5 or 6, probably.
Five or six.
I was going to say 7.
Yeah.
Against us?
Sure.
Over a whole year, though.
Yeah.
So that's like how many games? How many games will we play against the Athletics?
20? 24?
Yeah, I could see him hitting like... I could see... Not 15, but okay. Maybe like 10. I think it's double digits.
Wow.
I think it's double digits. I think okay. He's just going to wallop the ball. And we have so many. I think he's going to punish poor Drew Smiley. And I don't know. That the power is the one thing he has. And we have a bunch of pitchers who love to live in the zone now. So I don't know. Luke, what do you think?
I jokingly kind of texted you guys his season total +5. Just because it's fun to have guys on different teams who it seems like hit every single one of their homers.
Against us.
Yeah.
You
no, I mean, I could see him, I don't know. I mean, if he plays about an eighth of his games against Seattle and we're particularly unlucky, he hits about a quarter of his dingers against us, maybe like 7 or 8. I don't know. There's absolutely, I mean, like you said, people like to live in the zone on this team. What's nice, I don't know. Yeah, 7. I'll go 7. That's my final answer.
It sounds like a good one. I'm going to stick at double digits, 10 or 11, something like that.
Maybe this will have to go into some Lookout Landing over-unders before the season starts. Maybe this will be good.
That could be fun. Yeah, let's do that. All right, so let's return to the A's and talk about their rotation, which, again, is not very fun. Features like one fun pitcher who was not fun last year. Is this the end of the Sonny Gray era?
If he is returning close to form in the first 3 months of the year, he will be traded by the trade deadline.
I can see that.
They need to commit to more of a full retooling than they are right now. They're holding out some weird grain of hope that this is a wild card contender. It's just not. There's nothing behind Gray in that rotation. There's very little scary implements of that lineup. So they need to be able to move a guy like Gray, someone like Steven Voigt, maybe a couple of their relievers to get some value and recoup what they gave up a couple of seasons ago when they went for it and kind of failed.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought in Zobrist, they brought in Shark, they brought in Hamill. It just didn't work, and they gave up a lot to do it. And they gave up a lot from a team that didn't have a lot to do with. And so this is their chance to sort of do that full retooling, reset the clock a bit. I don't think they want to do that, but at some point they will face reality one way or another.
Yeah, I think two guys on their rotation that kind of interesting, but I don't think they're going to be a top of the rotation type of players are Manea and Cotton.
Yeah, people are pretty excited about Cotton specifically.
I think he's interesting. I don't know if he's higher than a 3 in the rotation.
That big Velo, though.
Some interesting names, but I agree with Zach. I think Gray could get moved if he's close to what he was in previous years, because I'm a big fan of his. I hope he returns to form.
I see Manea and and Cotton being really interesting. Although Cotton, we knocked Cotton around pretty well.
Yeah, but I think that was only like his second or third start, something like that, when we first faced him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Small sample size, I guess.
A little bit of a welcome to the bigs moment.
Yeah, but the question, he never was a top prospect, Cotton. He just put up much better results, you'd think, because he's a great changeup. And so that doesn't necessarily translate as well to the big leagues. We've seen that, especially if you don't have that pitch to get righties out, if he doesn't develop a little bit of a slider or a cutter to kind of go with it.
Which it's definitely hard to work on developing anything when you are under that pressure of being in the majors. Maybe he was rushed a little?
Possible. Certainly possible.
So related to that question, will the bullpen be given enough leads to hold? Because the bullpen for the A's is not a tire fire. That might be the one part of the team that's not a tire fire.
Yeah, the projections don't love their bullpen. But I do. I think it's really talented. It's a good mix of young arms and veterans who've been there before. And they're just not going to have enough of a chance unless things like Gray returns to form, and A and Cotton are both very good. Maybe Graveman isn't just awful. They have a chance to then get games to that lead innings and kind of work their way through them. But it's just not going to get to that point. And so those guys are going to become more trade bait than anything else this year instead of more contributors for Oakland.
Why did we leave Oakland to talk about until last? This is a major bummer.
Well, in theory, it's a good thing for us.
Right. They've kind of been a thorn in our side for years, so this is fine.
Oh, they'll still win the season series against us.
Oh, don't say that. Because you're probably right.
All right. Well, on that note, I think we have one more question about the Mariners. So we're going to sum up the Mariners season. And Luke, you're going to do that in 30 seconds. Are you ready?
I wasn't informed that I'd be doing this.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Yep.
Restate the question, please.
You're going to sum up the Mariners offseason in 30 seconds.
Oh, ready? My goodness. So I'm going right now?
Yeah. Yep.
Whenever
you're
ready.
It's hard to sum something up in 30 seconds.
Nope, okay,
I'm sorry. We're live. We have to go.
Ready, set, go.
Wow. Well, the Mariners did a lot. A couple cool things they did. They brought in Drew Smyly, which made me really happy. And my roommate and I were freaking out about that for a while. John Segura trade that also brought in Mitch Haniger. Jeff Sullivan had a sweet article about that I read multiple times about how good Mitch Haniger actually is, which was a lot of fun. Carlos Ruiz comes in to back up Zunino, which is also fun. The Mariners get Yvonne Gallardo for Seth Smith. Your guys' article said that we canceled Father's Day after that, which was really funny also. I wasn't with you guys yet, but that was fun. And I'm sure I'm blanking on a few other moves that were also exciting as well. Oh, Dyson, come on.
Oh, come on, Munger. sorry, that was a little bit of rookie hazing.
Oh, it's all good.
So one of the questions, well, we got one question about the Mariners from Brian Moe 87 at Brian Moe 87. We all know about big changes in the offseason. What are some smaller changes to watch for in 2017? So Luke kind of hit the big moves, but what are the things that might not have been talked about as much? Things that haven't gotten a ton of attention.
We haven't made little moves. The one that you could call out for someone who's going to make the team is someone like a Taylor Motter. That's kind of it. But nothing else we've done has been little.
It's been well publicized. And to address like pretty big holes, right? You know, with the epic Smyly trade, the Yovani Gallardo trade, these were big things. The blockbuster that went down on Thanksgiving, you know, a lot of drama in those.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest little thing is just, it's going to be starting a season without Blake Park.
Oh, this is Zach's particular little hobby horse. I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah.
I would say that, like, maybe one of the things that isn't going, that isn't getting talked about is the rise of Andrew Moore. Obviously, I'm talking about it.
You had to get it in this episode, didn't you? You just had to.
But no, seriously, I was just listening to Greg Johns's podcast today, the Mariners, what I forget what it's called.
The little like 10-minute. I listened to that right before we recorded too.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, it was about Andrew Moore, and so I think he's just, that's kind of his sleeper pick. He's my sleeper pick for, and I mean, Johns came out and said we're going to see him in the majors at some point this year, and those guys tend to be pretty plugged in. I know Dreher's talked about him, and it just seems like it sort of seems like a fait accompli that we're going to see him at some point this year. So
yeah,
that's something that is small that I think is maybe under the radar that might be something that impacts the 2017 season, maybe in kind of a big way.
Yeah. That's potentially it.
Come on, Luke.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say. Does dealing Alex Jackson for Rob Whalen and Max Posey count? I think that's kind of like a smaller move compared to other stuff that went on.
Yeah, I think anything that has to do with the minor leagues is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but you'd say Whalen's close enough that if something bad happened, that he would probably make a couple starts, right? So it could even have like a current effect, right? A little bit,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If I change my voice a little bit.
know? And Posey is really interesting too. I mean, Whalen I think is closer, but Posey is Posey. If they can get his mechanics maybe a little bit ironed out, could be really interesting. I mean, I don't know if we're talking about him purely as a reliever or if we're maybe looking at him as a starter. Do you know, Zach?
I don't see him as a, I mean, maybe he profiles a little bit as a reliever, but he seems like the potential to be the next kind of Doug Fister guy. The tall dude who isn't really like dominating and striking people out, but it still is commanding the ball and having an impact that way.
Not flashy, but gets the job done.
Maybe Lance Painter will teach him that cutter that worked on with Paxton.
Yeah, and maybe this is an issue that they had, that they figured out with Paxton too, right? It's about arm angle and mm-hmm. repeatability for those big guys. That's mm-hmm. It's not easy.
That's one of the things that Stottlemyre brought up a couple weeks ago on the Hot Stove podcast when they were talking about their new pitching summit that they started this year. One of the big focuses was know your body.
I made some bad jokes about. I'm sorry. Come on, know your body. True. I mean, whatever.
But yeah, I mean that's just one of the things I'm sure the organization has a focus on, especially for the younger guys. Just you know what your body is doing when you're up there on the mound. So maybe it's one of those things that they can do something with him like they did Paxton, like you said.
Well, I think that is a good place to wrap up this conversation. Thank you so much to those of you who submitted questions for us. And thank you to Zach for joining us. And thank you also to Luke for joining us and for putting up with our sort of mean trick.
I thought it was fun. You can pull a mean trick on me most days. I was about to say any day, and then I quit on that. I didn't think I wanted to commit to that.
Did you quit on that? Like you quit on your basketball game?
I didn't quit in my basketball game. Oh no!
I'm
a grinder. I try hard.
It's a real.
What's really fun is all. Whenever we're walking down, whenever we walk or drive down to the games, we'll be like, "I'm like, I don't care who we're playing. I don't care how nice they are. I'm throwing elbows." But then it never happens. I talk a really mean game. And it really ends up happening.
Well, you fit right in at Lookout Landing, then.
You guys throw elbows at Lookout Landing?
Oh, Zach throws elbows all the time.
Verbal elbows.
Does he throw elbows at his imaginary cats?
That's pretty spot on.
That's right? Why he can't have any real cats.
Listen, you don't come into the paint if you're not willing to eat an elbow. I think I know that.
All right, well, thank you so much, listeners, for putting up with us for another week. And thank you to our guests. And we will talk to you next time. So remarkable.
These mammals are hell-bent on fashioning new gods, so they can go on being godless animals.
Fun fact about my name is my dad thought it would be sweet if I was an NFL kicker, so that if I came in with the game on the line, they'd play Thunderstruck by AC/DC, but instead of chanting Thunder, the crowd would chant Munger. It'd be so awesome.
That's Munger! That's a really developed fantasy. Munger.
See, does this go down to the outtakes, and that's the music we use to head into it?
Well, now we have to. We're kind of forced to do that.
There were other ones. He almost named me Hugh, so my name would be Hugh Munger.
Hugh Munger?
How great would that have been?